97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. Thanks for hanging out with us here on 97.1 FM Talk. And before we get to Sue's news, though, I did see the Thunderbolts movie. And Fred, I don't know, are you a big fan of the MCU?
I'm not. So explain it to me, and I have a question.
Okay. Well,
first off, who are they?
Okay.
Thank you, Fred. If I had the bell, I'd ring it.
Oh, here we go. There's the bell. So, no, the idea of the Thunderbolts is these are all kind of cut-rate superheroes. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Mystery Men, which had Pee Wee Herman in it, and it had Greg Kinnear. And Pee Wee Herman was this superhero called the Spleen. And I'm not going to describe to you his superpowers because FCC rules might get involved here. But these guys in Thunderbolts are kind of your lower tier superheroes that are forced together through circumstances, and they kind of become a team. And what's interesting about them is they're all characters that we've seen in other MCU movies. But my far and away my favorite one is, you know, the sheriff from Stranger Things, the cop who's, I don't know if you ever watched Stranger Things,
yeah.
But the actor is David Harbour. And when he's in this movie, Thunderbolts, he steals every scene that he's in.
He's great. He's
so good. He plays this character called the Red Guardian, who was like, under the Soviet Union, he was like Captain America for the Soviet Union.
Oh.
Okay, he got the super serum, but now he's kind of old, he's kind of fat, he's not in Russia anymore, he's in the United States. And he steals every scene because he's got this strong Russian accent. He's loud. He's boisterous. He's the best part of the movie.
So are these good guys or bad guys?
Well, these are, and that's a great question.
That is the question.
So at the beginning, they are all people who have, shall I say, questionable motives. But by the end of the movie, they all have good hearts. They all become good guys by the end of the movie. But that's the point. To me, a good movie not only tells a story, but also you get to experience how characters change and grow during the course of a movie. That could be in a romantic movie. It could be in a sci-fi movie, any movie. I want to see characters learn and grow and change. And this movie does that, even in the context of kind of second-tier superheroes. And the lead person of the group is someone, if you've ever seen any movie, there's someone called Bucky Barnes, who was friends with Captain America during World War II. He became someone called the Winter Soldier, and he's in this movie as well. He's kind of the most upstanding.
That's Sebastian Stan.
Sebastian Stan is the actor.
Oh.
But he's kind of the most upstanding member of the group, and the rest of them are on the fringes of goodness. But then through the course of the movie, then they become good guys.
So sort of like minor league heroes?
Minor league heroes would be a very good way of putting it. I enjoyed the movie. I don't want to give away any spoilers, so I won't say anything, but it was a fun ride. And another thing that's a fun ride is Sue's News.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, on this day in history, Ethan, this, of course, will have some music in it, but hang on, and you'll know when. 60 years ago today, in 1965, Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones fell asleep in the early hours of the morning, and he was improvising on a new guitar in his hotel room in Clearwater, Florida. And when he woke up, he thought, man, I cannot remember that riff. But I thought it was pretty good. Maybe I was just dreaming. Then he noticed a tape recorder he'd left running and played back the opening of I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow, and think where if that tape recorder had not been left on, we would have been robbed of one of the
yes.
of one of the greatest rock songs of all time.
That would be a
it's
great
just nuts
that'd,
to
that'd
me.
Be a great fact, you know, one of your facts for the day.
That's true. It's a great random fact, but since it happened on this day in history, I thought, we'll throw it in there. It's just amazing to think about. And of course, would that happen today? Would you hit record on your phone and then fall asleep? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't
think
so.
Suck up all your battery? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Probably not. It just doesn't have the same thing. He must not have been out that long if the tape was still running. That was my thought as well.
And I wonder if alcohol or drugs were involved in any way.
Well, you make that up for yourself.
You know, and as a radio person, I'm wondering what type of tape was it?
Yeah, why?
Was it like right? a reel-to-reel tape or what was it?
Yeah, Fred, I don't know. That'd be interesting
cassette,
to know as
not
well.
A cassette. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, today, of course, was the first day of Real ID at the airport. Has anybody heard of Real Time? I've been looking online to see how it went. I'm not seeing any horror stories.
No.
Mostly, but they say each TSA in each city can do what they want their own way.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Sue, because coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk to Denny Hoskins, the Missouri Secretary of State, on how Missouri is handling the Real ID, whether Missouri is having problems at the airports, and what people can do to expedite getting Real ID. That'll be in the very next segment after Sue's News.
Well, that's good to know, because if you don't have it, and I read several interviews with people, you know, reporters went out to the airports today looking for people who, and pretty much everybody said the same thing. Yeah, I knew it was coming, but yeah. I just put it off.
But and, Sue, if you're the reporter, though, let's talk about this for a second. If you're the reporter that goes to the airport, do you just look for stupid people to ask about the Real ID? In other words, how do you determine who you're going to ask whether they have Real ID? The people that look lost and confused?
Well, I think it's probably a certain line. If you don't have Real ID, line up here.
Yeah, go to the longest line and then talk to the folks in the longest line.
Okay. I think that's probably it.
I think a lot of people were just lulled into a false sense of security that it wasn't going to happen because it had been delayed so many times.
Correct.
Well, that could be.
And then
they
it snuck
also
up
said,
on you.
They also said there's been a run, obviously, on DMVs just in the last week as people go, oh, no. And there have been huge waits and that sort of thing. That's our own young Ethan is in that category. But he at least has a passport. They talked to a guy who didn't have a passport either, and you really have to, ugh. I look forward to hearing how that goes and what he has to say. Okay, did you hear this story? It was a woman in Kentucky named Holly that says her second grader ordered 30 cases of Dum Dum Suckers on Amazon. Each case has 2,340 suckers, which means she was getting more than 70,000 dum-dums for nearly $4,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Uh-huh. So she calls up Amazon as soon as she realized what happened. And initially, they just said, you can refuse delivery, but we're not going to give you your money back.
Oh.
But when the driver came, they didn't knock. They just stacked all of the cases on her porch. And once they were delivered, Amazon said, look, we can't take them back,
right.
Probably because they're food.
Exactly.
So she told this story on social media, and there's just a picture of all these cases of dum-dums, which is appropriately named, on this woman's front porch.
Yes, it is.
That's probably a daily delivery to Costco.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's true. But
yeah,
you know what?
That's true.
This lady now, though, she's going to have stocking stuffers for Christmas for the next 2,000 years.
Well, it's kind of funny. She reached out on social media in a few stations, but people started ordering boxes from her to help her out.
Aww. So now she's a reseller.
That's right. Now she managed to sell all of them. And then eventually Amazon reached out and said, you know what? Okay, we'll refund your money, either because they were taking some heat or because she was working with her bank to resolve it because it was $4,000 and she didn't have $4,000. Amazon wasn't taking them back, so Holly told her dum-dum buyers that she'd donate their money or the dum-dums themselves if they no longer wanted them. She said from here on out she's going to change a few settings on her phone so that doesn't happen again.
Yes.
I can't. What? If one of your sons, when he was a kid, ordered $4,000 worth of dum-dums, what would you do?
Start to like them. I don't know. I'd have been flabbergasted, but I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility.
Right. Mm. And do you get in trouble? Yes, I hope so. Good grief. $4,000? Oh, my gosh. Oh, and there was a story out. A man in his 70s crashed his car through the gates of Jennifer Aniston's L.A. home earlier this week, just a couple of days ago.
Yes.
In the middle of the afternoon, and apparently her security held the man at gunpoint until police could get there. And they were expected to book him on a felony charge of vandalism, but police seemed to think it wasn't an accident, because I thought, if a guy's, you know, older, maybe something happened or it was a medical thing. But it's not clear yet why he did it. But as of a couple days ago, there was no word if he was even targeting her. But she was home at the time. I can't imagine. La, la, la. You're sitting. Boom. Some guy comes crashing through your gates. The suspect does have a minor criminal history, but nothing involving her. So it doesn't sound like it was a stalker.
Well,
good
she
security.
Does, yeah, good yeah. security. But she does have a history of people breaking into where she is. This happened many times over the past 20 or 30 years for Jennifer Aniston. So she's right to be concerned, I think, even as much, if not more so, than most celebrities. But in this instance, yeah, I thought the same way you did, Sue. I thought at first when I heard it was an older person that, you know, they stepped on the gas instead of the brake,
exactly,
made a wrong turn, and then boom. But can you imagine? Let's assume that it was a mistake, and you break through somebody's gate, and all of a sudden there's 20 guys with pistols drawn.
Oh, my gosh.
That would be a problem.
And how much does it cost her to keep all these guys with pistols on, you know, on the payroll, just because that just is annoying as well.
Well, Friends is still in syndication.
Yeah, the
Sue.
Residuals are pretty good for that.
Residuals from Friends are very, very lucrative.
Well, that's true. But I just hate that she has to do that. Fred, you're a Hall of Famer. Do you have armed guards?
Oh, yeah.
I have a small dog.
That's right. That's right. Luna can yip him to death.
Who will let anyone into the house unless you're another dog? That's right.
I understand. Mine, too, would say, come on in. Here's the carpet. Take out, you know, come on. You got food? Food's great. U.S. News and World Report does a study each year, and it ranks all 50 states based on everything from education to healthcare, infrastructure, economy. And this year, what do you think the number one state is based on all those things? You got a 1 out of 50 shot. Ethan.
Say, go ahead and start with Fred.
All right, Fred.
The best of everything on every category?
From education to healthcare, infrastructure, economy. What is the number one state? I will give you a hint. Oh. It's the third straight year this state has done it.
Okay. Florida.
No, but I like that guess.
I'm going to guess Utah.
That is correct.
Wow.
I was going to say Michigan, if that mattered for anything.
It is Utah. Utah tops the list mostly because it landed in the top 10 in 5 of 8 categories.
What made you
it's
think
first
Utah?
In
what made me think of Utah was just that there's not a lot of people there.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So if there's not a lot of people there, chances are it's pretty darn good to
Fair
live
enough.
There if there's not a lot of people there.
Well, that's true. And it's beautiful and it's got, you know, that sort of thing. It's the first in fiscal stability, third in both economy and infrastructure, fourth in education, and seventh in crime. So not too shabby. The bottom states, number two was New Hampshire, and then Idaho, Minnesota, Nebraska. Florida was in there, Fred.
All right.
Vermont, South Dakota, Massachusetts, and Washington. The worst state is apparently Louisiana in all those categories. Go figure. All right, they've got a new report out on AI fast food drive-thrus, and it found that AI-powered interactions provide, well, here's a surprise, faster service and improved efficiency, but it's not that great. 22% of the time, AI voice ordering systems glitch.
Yes.
And it needs an employee to step in and help. There were also order inaccuracies with AI, and 65% of those involved AI's inability to deal with customization requests. Yeah, I don't want tomato. No ketchup, whatever.
You know, I'm just thinking, could it be any worse than it really is any other time?
Oh, I do. I could see you going in there and placing your order, and then when you roll up, they say that's $4,000 worth of dum-dums.
Right.
You know, I'm like, I could see that happening. But especially, as you mentioned, Sue, if you're going to say, well, listen, I want there to be no ice in my drink, and I want light mayo on this, that's never, there's no planet where that comes out well.
They never understand exactly what you're saying anyway. So if you vary from the script, unless somebody has programmed light mayo in there, which I guarantee you they haven't.
No. And plus, think about this for a second. If you think about how AI works, but it's programmed to recognize, at least in the United States, the English language. But what happens when you have different dialects?
Oh, God.
You have different accents? I mean, we're a melting pot of people, and there's no way an AI program is going to distinguish between someone from Texas and someone from New Hampshire. It's never going to get that right,
that
ever.
That sounds like a lawsuit for you, Brad.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, here's a surprise. Kiosk ordering lagged on friendliness. Well, it's a computer, so yeah. Have you ever ordered from one of those kiosks, Fred, in Travels? Did they have those in Japan?
Yeah, but it didn't really matter because I wouldn't have been able to read it anyway.
They don't have English.
I don't even like them I don't even like using the kiosks here.
Yeah, they don't thrill me.
I'd rather be a real person.
Right. Me too.
I get it. Plus, you want that person to have a job.
Absolutely.
It's all related to the same thing. Okay, and finally at Sue's News, we do have today's random fact. This is kind of disgusting, but you produce enough saliva every day to fill a wine bottle. And over the course of your lifetime, you produce enough saliva to fill up 53 bathtubs.
Wow.
And that's it.
I would never have guessed that.
Sue, it's random.
That is, in fact,
Thank you, Ethan.
Thank you, Sue. Great to hear from you on that. As we kind of teased a few moments ago when we were talking to Sue, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Denny Hoskins. He's the Missouri Secretary of State. And we're going to talk about Real ID, problems that we may be having or seeing across the state, and what you can do. When I say you, I mean you, Ethan Hannaford. What you can do to get your Real ID. Next on the Mark Reardon Show, Brad Young sitting in today. Stick around. Brad Young sitting in for Mark today. And by the way, Mark Reardon will be back tomorrow telling us all about his vacation trip. And according to Fred Bottomer, he wants to book about 100 guests tomorrow. So we'll see if he can squeeze them all in. But the guest that I have right now is Denny Hoskins. You know Denny Hoskins. He's our Missouri Secretary of State. And we want to talk about Real ID. Secretary Hoskins, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you, sir. So we've all heard about this Real ID situation. And I guess, first of all, and we'll talk about what to do later if you don't have it. But right now, have you been made aware of any ongoing major issues across the state when it comes to people trying to fly with or without their Real ID?
Yes. Well, you know, the Real ID started, it was actually enacted back in 2005 following the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, which changed the way that you get a driver's license to be Real ID compliant. So it put some extra security protocols in there. Now, starting on the 7th, May 7th, you had to have a Real ID to fly, or at least that's what they tell you. Now, if you do not have a Real ID and you don't have a passport, and you want to fly, you can still fly. However, there will be an additional screening process that could take quite a bit longer if you just go in there with your regular driver's license and try to fly without a Real ID. So I know that it can take, I think, 10 to 15 business days for processing and mailing to get your Real ID. And how you know whether or not you have a Real ID here in the state of Missouri, look at your driver's license. If it has a gold star in the right corner, then it is a Real ID. If it does not have a gold star, it probably says something like not for Real ID purposes, and therefore you don't have a Real ID. Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense. Here's the question that comes to my mind, and we're talking to Missouri Secretary of State Denny Hoskins, is that, and you even mentioned this, that going back to 2005, we started talking about this. Do you think there's some element here of the particularly the federal government, but postponing the requirement to the final drop dead date when you have to have real ID? Does that, do you think, have any bearing in leading people into a false sense of security if the government takes 20 years to implement this real ID system?
Yeah, most certainly. That's government at its best or at its worst. That's for sure. I know that when I was a state senator and we kind of debated the real ID requirements, because there were a lot of concerns. There were state challenges in updating the systems and processes to meet these new federal standards. There were questions and public concerns regarding the privacy and data security of this. And it seemed like endless extensions of the deadline. But yes, and now they finally said, hey, as of May 7th, and yes, that is the drop dead date that you have to have this for traveling purposes. Even if you're just flying, let's say flying from St. Louis to Kansas City or St. Louis to Chicago, you have to have a real ID to fly.
Yeah, I've made the comparison about with student loans, that the federal government put off the repayment of student loans for so long that people thought, well, I'm never going to have to repay my loans at all.
That's right.
And now when the federal government comes in under the Trump administration and says, hey, pal, you borrowed the money, you got to pay it back. And now everybody's shocked. Oh, my goodness. I've got to actually pay this back? But yeah, you do. And I have no problem with implementing rules. But it seems like people were led into this false sense of security that, well, the government's going to kick the can down the road. And I'm glad that finally the government's put its foot down and said, listen, if we're going to do this, here's the deadline. We've reached the deadline. But if someone doesn't have a real ID, you mentioned it can take some days for that to be processed. But if someone's going to fly, say, tomorrow and they don't have a real ID, they can show up with their passport, right?
That's right. They can show up with your passport. Now, what if you don't have a passport? Then I would bring a U.S. military ID if you have one of those, or if you have one of the DHS trusted traveler cards like Global Entry, Nexus, or Sentry. I actually have a Global Entry card. Or if you have an enhanced driver's license, an EDL issued by a certain state. So those all work in lieu of a real ID. But let's say, hey, I don't have any of those. I don't have a passport. I'm not in the military. I don't have Global Entry card. And I'm flying this weekend. And I went and applied for real ID yesterday. But the paper copy that they give you that does not work for a real ID, only that official card that you get in the mail that takes 10 to 15 days. Well, you can still go and fly. However, you will undergo additional screening at the airport. And what exactly that additional screening is, I don't know. And it does not say on TSA.gov. So if you've got questions, you need to go to TSA.gov or go to the Department of Revenue website here in the state of Missouri, and that's DOR.MO.gov. So there are ways to fly, even if you don't have a real ID or passport or another acceptable form of ID, but it says that you will have to go through an additional screening process. And what exactly that is, they have not detailed that out. I would bring every form of ID that you had, especially if you had whatever you use to apply for that real ID, but you haven't got your real ID card yet in the mail. I would bring every form of identification, that your birth certificate, your Social Security card, a utility bill that has your name and address on it. Any other form of ID that you have, I would make sure that you keep that, because it is going to take you, I can almost guarantee you, it's going to take you longer to get through the airport and get checked in if you have to provide those other forms of identification and go through that additional screening process.
Well, speaking of incentives, that seems like a great incentive to get this worked out so you don't spend 3 hours at the airport going through the check-in process. Denny Hoskins, Missouri Secretary of State. Hey, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you, sir. And, you know, when you talk about government, I have my entire adult life been a critic of the way government works in many instances. And one of those ways, and again, sometimes I get criticized for only talking about a lot of times talking about legal issues. And yet legal issues so often define how our culture operates. I mean, going through the airport with or without a real ID, that's a legal issue. Can the government do that? Can they legally require you to have a different form of ID? If they do require it and you don't meet those requirements, can the government legally keep you off of an airplane? Those are all legal issues that impact our daily lives. And another legal issue that impacts our daily lives right now is our digital lives. Just stop and think for just a second. How much of your own life is digital? Whether it's financial records, whether it's your investments that's out there digitally, the mortgage on your house, the amount of money that you owe, your debts, your credit card debts, your assets, your income information, all of that digital information. Here's the reason why I bring that up. Anyone who's ever watched Law and Order knows, or any police show, right, that if the government wants to take something from you, that number one, they have to have a warrant, right? They have to come in, they have to go to a court, they have to get a judge to sign off on it, and then they have to come and present you with a warrant if they're going to take your personal property or information. That's true in so many areas. But there's a case that's going to be at the Supreme Court. It was recently argued at the Supreme Court. We're going to get a decision on this by June. But it deals with your digital data. And the amount of digital data that we have out there is staggering. I don't think any of us, unless you are a computer expert, I don't think any of us truly comprehend how much of our digital lives are online. But here's the gist of this court case and why I think you need to know about this. There was a company called, it's a cryptocurrency exchange called Coinbase. And the IRS in 2016 ordered Coinbase to hand over all transaction records of over 14,000 customers. Now, what happened is this, is that they had a warrant to obtain these records from Coinbase. But Coinbase then in turn had records of private individuals. So the government was able to confiscate all of the private financial transactions and records from all of these 14,000 customers. They didn't serve those 14,000 customers with a warrant. They didn't do that. They just went and grabbed this information from Coinbase. And then this particular plaintiff got a letter in the mail. And the letter suggested that just because he was a cryptocurrency investor with Coinbase, it suggested that he had then underreported his cryptocurrency income. Now, once this person looked into it, as anyone would, if you got a letter from the IRS, you're going to look into it, he discovered that the IRS had all of his transaction logs, all of his wallet addresses, all of his public keys. Now, if you know anything about cryptocurrency or digital information, a public key essentially opens the door to all of your online transactions. And with that public key, the IRS could, in theory, monitor any and all of this individual's future transactions, even in other areas of his digital life. So Harper, the plaintiff here, his position was, look, I haven't done anything wrong. I didn't break any laws. I've reported all of my income. I literally broke no laws and did nothing wrong. And yet now the IRS has his digital footprint and all of his transactions online and can even follow his transactions in the future, even though he broke no laws and committed no crime. So he has filed a lawsuit and he filed this lawsuit, and the lower courts dismissed the lawsuit against the IRS. Because the IRS has, and this is something I even studied in law school, something called the third-party doctrine. It goes all the way back to the 1970s, and no, I wasn't in law school in the 1970s. I was eating Oreos and watching Scooby-Doo in the 1970s. But at that point, it said that Americans lose their Fourth Amendment it's a search and seizure amendment, is the Fourth Amendment. They lose those protections if they share information with third parties. So to put it in terms that you can really digest in terms of how it applies to you, in this situation, this guy used Coinbase for his financial transactions, and in doing so, under Supreme Court doctrine, he gave up his rights under the Fourth Amendment. But is that right? I mean, if you buy something online, do you really think you're giving up your Fourth Amendment rights of search and seizure? Do you really think that you're giving up your right to privacy when it comes to the government having information about you just because you chose to buy something online, because you chose to buy some cryptocurrency? I don't think so. I'm not doing anything wrong, but I don't want my private information taken by the government just because I bought something or used some service. And so I hope that the Supreme Court uses this as an opportunity to give you more protections, because in today's age that we live in, we have very few protections on our privacy. And I think we need to guard those protections strenuously, because if we don't, then literally we will have no privacy whatsoever. Hey, we're going to take a break here. We've got more coming up actually in the next hour, and we're going to be talking to Fred, our own Hall of Famer, Fred Bottomer, is going to be coming back in to fill us in on the status of the conclave going on right now in Rome regarding the next pope. He's the religion editor over at KMOX, an expert on this stuff. We'll talk to Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer next on The Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young, stick around. Welcome back to The Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. And as I mentioned before the break, we were going to bring in Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer to talk about the conclave that's going on right now in Rome, the process of picking the next pope. Fred, great to talk to you again.
Oh, good. No, I'm glad you want to know about this.
Yes, I do. It's fascinating. So, what's the update? Let's just talk about the immediate update from today.
Okay, so today was day one of the papal conclave. You've got 133 voting age cardinals, all under the age of 80, gathered in Rome at the Vatican. They start the morning at St. Peter's Basilica for a mass, and then they have lunch. And then they proceed from one area to the Sistine Chapel. And once they get in there, they hear a sermon from a cardinal that they chose that kind of tells them what their duty is as cardinals to elect the new pope and what they see as the future vision of the church. And then the cardinals all take an oath of secrecy that they will never, release what goes on behind these closed doors unless they get specific permission from the Pope to do that. I've got some sound from one of our favorites, St. Louis native Timothy Dolan.
Yes.
Before he went into the conclave, he was at St. Martha's residence, which is where all the cardinals are staying earlier this morning. And he did a post on social media to all of his followers. And here's what that sounded like.
This is the day we enter the conclave, and I'm about ready to go into the Domus Santa Marta. So this could be the last time I talk to you in a couple of days. I don't know how long the conclave will be. Now, we leave here and go over to the Sistine Chapel every day for our prayers and for our voting, but this is where we reside. So, folks, I won't be able to talk to you until you see the white smoke. I look forward to doing that. Keep us in your prayers.
And so once he was inside, one of the last things that the public got to hear through Vatican radio was the cardinals taking their oath of secrecy. And here's Cardinal Dolan doing it, but he's doing it in Italian.
Cardinalis Dolan, spondio, lovio, ac iuro. Sic me Deus adiuvit et hic sancta de Evangelia quae manu mea tango.
So after the oath, they vote. And there was one vote today. It took about 3.5 hours from when they entered the Sistine Chapel until the black smoke came out of the steeple above St. Peter's Basilica, or above the Sistine Chapel.
And so we're sure
the black smoke.
Yeah, we're sure that the black smoke is not just, Steve who burned his toast.
No.
Okay.
This is very, very thought out. And so that shows that they did not reach a consensus of a 2/3 majority on the first ballot, which is really a surprise to no one because I can't think of a time that it did.
No. I mean, there's a vote. There's a lot of deliberations that are going on right now.
Right. So that's all going on. You know, so then the Cardinals have all gone back to their residences and you know, at the Vatican. They're going to eat. They sleep. And then they go at it again in the morning. There are four votes every day. 7 hours difference between St. Louis and Rome. So St. Louis time, the next votes will come at 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. And then they'll break for lunch. And then they have another round of votes at 10 a.m. and noon central time tomorrow. And the curious thing is that for the past two conclaves, when Pope Francis was elected, it was on day two on the fifth ballot. When Pope Benedict was elected, it was on day two on the fourth ballot. When Pope John Paul II was elected back in 1978, it was on day three on the eighth ballot. So that gives you some sort of a sense that these things usually lately have been happening, you know, the second or third day.
Right. And you mentioned something that I want to come back to, because in some of the coverage that I've seen, I've heard sometimes the media compare this to a jury, where a jury goes in and deliberates. But in a jury, once the trial is over, the jury members are free to go and talk about everything that happened in the jury. But in this conclave, unless the Pope specifically allows it, did you say that even once a Pope is chosen, that the members, the cardinals who are voting, they can't go out and give an interview and tell how the deliberations went?
That's right. They take the final results, and I think they seal them in an envelope, and they put it in the papal archives. But no one is supposed to ever know, you know, what the vote was unless someone leaks it, which, you see news stories from time to time of saying, oh, well, here's what happened in the first round when Pope Francis was you know, elected. But you never know if any of that's accurate or not.
True. Have you seen any of the movies like The Conclave?
Yeah, certainly I saw
Conclave. Did you see The Conclave? You did see that.
I thought that was very well done. I think a lot of people say, I guess it depends on how close you are to the issue, but some say it was very well done, at least when it came to the voting. Some people said the politicking was a little bit too strong, that sort of thing. So, you know, we'll see. Tomorrow, they'll be back in the Vatican taking their next votes.
Very good. Fred Bottomer, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Hey, we've got more on the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today right after this.
Get more at 971talk.com.